He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys. What are you finding out there? Yes, it is.
And as of the production day of this show, if anybody's listening and is in the stock market looking at Tesla stock, I believe, is splitting into five ways, five shares for one day. If those are listening on Monday, it's today. Later, it's too late.
Robin.
Yes.
This discussion, the Tesla, by the way, has been acknowledging that this was going to happen for 6 weeks. And
I know, and
surprisingly,
I didn't hear it until over the weekend.
Well, okay, but surprisingly, and I say that in quotes, surprisingly, the stock has gone up considerably. So here we go. Yes.
So I wish I could have bought it originally, as many people do. I'm not ready to be able to buy it today, publication day of the show. And so I'm off the charts for missing it.
Okay. So
at any rate, it'll be another winning go for Tesla stock for those who want to get it at the introductory or the split price if they can get it on the day of split. Other headlines to cover.
How about when
Mayflies are a dark spot on GM's launch of big SUVs. Do you know that when you go and buy cars or vehicles, one of the things dealers try to sell you is paint protection coverage? And I have never bought it, and I've said on this show, don't pay for it because it's usually very expensive. And now the headline in one of the automotive publications is that GM has a batch of Tahoes and other SUVs that were parked along a lake after being produced with paint contamination of mayflies. And they've found it after about 200 of them have been shipped to dealers. And they are spending hours, according to the article, trying to rub the mayfly stains, or whatever it is, off of their paint on these brand newly produced SUV vehicles off the assembly line. Now, the funny part about it, besides the fact that they didn't apply paint protection to their paint, is that they park these vehicles after they come off the assembly line in funny places. And the article said they parked it along some lake in Texas. I believe it's in Texas. And why they had to go to a lakeside place to park SUVs is God only knows. It either says they've got all their other lots are full, but in any event, that's a headline that the public won't ever see probably, but I thought it'd be fun for the people listening to this show to hear about SUV paint pollution by mayflies.
What I would like to know about is, obviously, you are back in the area from your other undisclosed location, and I am wondering what you're finding on the road, because I am seeing a number of, this is a wrong use of this term, but road warriors who are, A, completely lost, B, don't rely on anything other than their GPS, and C, appear to have moved into the area with no intention of leaving.
I think you're right on all counts. I don't know about. I just have a ride back, but I haven't arrived back long enough to hear what you have said. You've seen. This goes to the point of people who have left urban areas and are out searching for any place that isn't crowded, and they may or may not know where they are on the road when they get up here. But I will tell you where I was, which is also fairly rural in one sense of the word, the same thing is happening. License plates from Vermont, who I never see where I usually am in the summer. Texas,
oh, yeah.
Florida, and California were floating around the roads where I have been much of the summer. And some of them are parked in rental houses, I believe. Some of them are maybe looking for real estate to buy. The real estate market over there is as hot as it's been up in Litchfield County and the surrounding areas up in Dutchess and Columbia County and Berkshire County of Massachusetts over the last several months.
But what I'm wondering is, Because while Texas is different, and this has nothing to do with where you come from, it has everything to do with why you think it's okay to stop on a country road sort of in the middle because you have cell service and just stop.
That has been happening,
right.
You are obviously noting.
Yeah, but
usually if you go by these stopped vehicles, guess what's going on inside?
They're
peering at their cell phones.
When you don't have good cell service, people are not used to it.
They're peering at their cell phones. So your point is well taken for those who are listening to this.
But look at the bright side of that, Jill. That means they're pulling over and not talking while driving.
This is excellent, and I'm strongly encouraging that. I'm just complaining about the definition of over, pulling over.
They're sort of stopping
where they are.
There is that, and I know if... You know, I was told this week, you know, we had big, heavy thunderstorms and heavy rains, and people were traveling, you know, through those thunderstorms. And obviously, you want to try not to get on the road if you know the weather's going to be pretty bad. But, you know, if you're stuck there, you know, I guess the point is, if you are going to pull over or crawl at 2 miles an hour, you better get off the road and way off the road, obviously.
I'll add to that because I traveled I-95 in both directions over the last four-day period. And going north, I was in the right side of I-95 in both instances of problems that occurred on 95. And one of them was the southeastern coast of Connecticut really got hit by what appeared to have been tornadic wind activity on I-95, which totally blocked the southbound lane. On a Friday afternoon, no, it was a Thursday afternoon, and we were going north on the same road, the other side, which was not blocked, but because of the rubbernecking of what was going on the other side, we had our own sort of slowdown situation for about 8 miles, crawling at maybe 20 miles an hour off and on, as low as 5 miles an hour, but the southbound lane was absolutely stopped for probably, by the time we got through looking at it from the start place, because we saw where the trees were that had been blown across the highway, and the state trucks had not yet appeared to start clearing it out, I would bet there was probably 8 miles of backup before you started running into the traffic that was arriving at the backup. Backed up situation on 95 South.
Yeah, it looked pretty bad.
And over the weekend, a reverse happened, and there was a multi-car pile up on the northbound lane, and that had everybody slowing down to a crawl to watch it. And there were fire trucks, a car carrier, empty of cars, and four or five vehicles that looked like they were in the passing lane going northbound, and they were all stopped with myriads of police and rescue vehicles.
So, Rob, let me interrupt for a second. You just admitted you were rubbernecking as well, right? Because you just described the whole thing.
It's pretty hard not to when you're already stuck in traffic that's rubbernecking 5 miles ahead of you and you're moving along in a five-mile crawl of, like, ants in a column.
It's not hard
to rubberneck safely.
That is true.
I couldn't go any faster if I tried because I was squeezed between a car in front and back and all that.
That's what the guy in front of you said, too.
Yeah, Jay.
Yes.
While you... I send this to you because up until now, Robin hasn't been opening his emails fast enough. But there are some explanations going around just for car buying or activities or choices that I mean, it's one of those things that if you know anything about cars or what good resources are, you would look at this and go, are you kidding? You guys, whoever is reading this and thinking that it is so, should probably... delve deeper. What is your recommendation, basically? I don't care about me. Again, I'm A, old, and B, I'll call you. But for people who are suddenly faced with, oh my gosh, I've got to get a car. Or, oh, should I get an electric car? Or, oh, because I do remember, and Robin has heard this, you know, since the beginning of time, and it's not, doesn't make me look so great, but I was absolutely floored with the amount of maintenance. You know, when I went to buy my car, it was in the city, and it was a long time ago, and I went to the dealership, and we know that they sold me the car that they wanted to sell me instead of the car that I ordered. But then I had no idea that you had to basically do all these things to your car.
Well, if you buy an electric car, there's a lot of those things that you do not have to do anymore. And it's interesting, is I was just reading a long article, again, about Tesla, and I know we're going on this drink the Kool-Aid Tesla tangent again, but the reality is that Tesla's business model is different from every other manufacturer's, and historically, manufacturers have not only capitalized, but relied on the fact that cars need maintenance, and that when you sell your new car 4 years down the road, it becomes somebody else's car, and they need maintenance still, and probably even more maintenance and more repairs and more need for spare parts. So there's a huge industry out there for car maintenance and repairs that almost is, I don't know if it's bigger than the new car industry, but it's very large. And Tesla is fully aware, for instance, that in their business model, there is none of that or very little of that. Tesla really doesn't, there's no, electric motors are not like internal combustion engines. They don't need a lot of maintenance. They need zero maintenance. So basically, you're looking at tires and I think a lot of wheel bearings in Teslas over time. And when I say time, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of miles. So, you know, the model is you're basically buying a piece of software where with hardware built around it, and but then that software is used in a larger ecosystem that Tesla is not necessarily creating, but trying or participating in, and you know, with solar panels and house batteries, and they're trying to capitalize on that whole electrification concept. Back to car buying, I think that in this day and age, more and more, you should really consider an electric car. And I think the next couple of years will be interesting because there are other manufacturers coming out with probably very solid electric cars. Chevy's going to come out with a small SUV based on the Chevy Bolt, which, I, as we know, I think is a great car. And it'll probably afford, it'll probably end up being a $40,000 vehicle, so somewhat cheaper than a $50,000 Tesla, and just slightly more than a, you know, average run-of-the-mill small SUV that is now running well in the lower to mid 30s. So, yeah, look into electric vehicles first.
And
that would be my first thing.
And is there financing? Are there any incentives? Or is there financing for? Is that, or do you have to?
No incentives to finance an electric car that I have seen so far. There are some tax incentives which are still in place, but there was a limit of something like 250,000 vehicles in a particular line of cars. Once it was reached, those tax incentives just disappeared, either on a national basis or a state basis. I have not kept up on the latest incentives. But the incentives are going to decrease as the car sales increase because as the public accepts the option to buy electric cars and realizes that owning an electric car is not onerous at all. In fact, as Jay is mentioning, from a service standpoint, it is far less a service problem for somebody. I happen to have three vehicles right now that are within, according to the computer screens on the dashboard, within 7% of needing an oil change.
They're all screeching at you. You've got to take care of me. You've got to take care of me.
Well, that's right. But
I
run the mileage between the oil changes to the limit. I, you know, because the computers are now telling you when to change the oil. All the oil in the new cars is synthetic. We have talked off and on about last century when Mobile One came out that it was a 25,000 mile go between changes, except for maybe a 15,000-mile filter change, which is one quart's worth of synthetic. And now you don't do that because apparently now you have different SAE grades of synthetic because of the technology improvements in engine building and that kind of thing. But with synthetic oil, the garages that are not the dealerships are still suggesting 5,000-mile interchanges, change oil changes on their stickers on your windshield if you look up in the left-hand corner, which is not needed, but some people still recommend that you should do it. Now, with that in mind, I'm going to have to schedule three vehicles and then probably in the next month.
So how many miles have you got
to wait for an hour or so while they go through the process of servicing that vehicle? which you don't have to do in an electric car the same way, as Jay has mentioned.
So, Robin, how many miles have you gone through between oil changes on those?
Roughly 7,500 in the Jeep, 8,500 in one so far, still saying 7% or 10%, around 10%, a little below recommended change. You know, it does depend on the kind of driving. If you were in a dusty condition, as the manuals say, you've got to change it more often. I don't know whether the computer figures that out or not, but because I don't drive in dusty desert conditions. But I do go to the limit because I don't want to have to spend an hour and a half every 5,000 miles if I can do it every, 7,500 to 8,000 miles, which by that time it's two oil changes for the at that level instead of three.
Right. And also, there are definitely outfits that still do offer to pick up. You can do something like that locally, no?
Well, that has been offered in the pandemic situation with some dealerships. I'm not aware that I'm near enough to any of the dealerships that offer to do that.
So this is all warranty work?
10 or 15 mile range limits about what they're willing to do as far as picking up and dropping off your car for service and leaving one for you, maybe 20 miles.
But what I'm trying to find out is this is all warranty work, or is this something that could be done?
No, oil changes are not warranty work. Oil changes are service changes, and usually there's something else besides there. They check other things, and if they can figure out something else to charge you for, they might do it. But they will check your brakes or brake pad wear and all that, and they'll do a few other things, and they may call you up and say, you know, you really ought to do this or that. But until you're out of warranty, you really only have to probably have service done in your car according to the recommended manual recommendations, which
so can, I
can vary between one or two, every other oil change or every oil change, depending on what it is.
There's a big difference between the manufacturer's recommendations
that are
printed and published and what a particular dealership is going to print and publish and make you believe that it is the manufacturer's recommendations. And usually the dealer's recommendation, oh surprise, are make you go to the dealership twice as often as what the manufacturer would recommend. So take everything with a grain of salt. Really think about it. I'm not suggesting you should not do maintenance on your vehicles, but do what you need to do. And again, I always say, tires. As your vehicle gets older, tires are something to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
We're going into the winter season. You know, you can go on tires that are still legal but have a,
thin tread depth.
Yes, but as we go into the winter season, now's the time. If you're not going to put on winter tires later on, now's the time to start thinking about putting the best
all-weather tires
you can put on. Another maintenance item people overlook totally is shock absorbers, And I think that is probably the biggest critical factor in car handling. So it is important in as far as maintenance is concerned.
Yeah, and I think relative to the shock absorber situation, the tire situation, if you've purchased a car new, or may even be a pre-owned car, which may have been serviced to look like new, your tire treads are going to probably, assuming the alignment is knocked out, not knocked out of alignment, it's going to last you 40 to 60,000 miles in today's world of driving. Shock absorbers may last you, they've gotten a lot better in my opinion
they
than
have.
They used to be, and they may last you up to 100,000 miles. You won't know much about shock absorber feeling. It's sort of like paint going old in a room.
Exactly.
Unless your car is bouncing uncontrollably when you hit a bump, and there's absolutely no rebound control that you can feel, and it takes you four or five rebounds in your car to stop bouncing, you know your shocks are shot, and they should be changed. And it's funny when you go down a road behind somebody with no shock absorber absorption, because the car is just bobbing uncontrollably, and it does not help handling at all, as Jay has mentioned.
What is the electric vehicle shock absorber situation?
They have shock absorbers because they have suspensions.
That is one item that still needs to be replaced.
And same deal with tires. Can you put do they come with all?
They come with whatever the manufacturers decide to put on them, short of a person buying the car, as my father used to do, no matter what the car got delivered with when he was getting a new car, he had the dealer put on Michelins because he was a Michelin man, died in the wool, and he thought Michelin was the best tire to buy. So if they came with Firestones or Goodyears or anything other than Michelin, he'd have Michelins put on. But all the tires are pretty good at, you know, coming off the assembly line, and Tesla's no exception. But whether they're Pirellis or whether they're Michelins or whether they're Toyos or something, I don't know. It's what the
No, what I meant is, do they
contracted for?
I don't know. This is a an offshoot again of being ancient, but initially it was alleged that Priuses didn't handle very well in snow, and then I knew certain people who had put all-wheel tires on Priuses and had an easier time of it.
Well,
and
it's interesting
because my first all-wheel drive Prius yesterday.
Toyota
so
came out
Priuses
with
Priuses are now available all-wheel drive to take that out of the equation, Jill. But you're right. I had a friend who said her Prius was terrible in the snow, and I said, "What kind of tires?" She didn't have any idea. I said, "Get a good set of all-wheel, all-weather winter or winter tread tires, and you won't have any trouble with a two-wheel drive Prius in any generally flat terrain situation."
And Jay, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that when Toyota came out with the Prius, and other manufacturers did that with their hybrids as well, to even grade more. Better improve fuel
economy.
They put what they call low roll resistance tires. Yes, that did improve fuel economy, but they were obviously not as good
in winter
tires, or not better in all weather conditions. All seasons tires will probably, I think, will you'll get a little less. Mileage with a good all-weather tire or snow tire.
Definitely.
But, you know that's a compromise and a cost-benefit thing.
To Jay's comment, my Hyundai Hybrid came with low roll resistance tires, standard equipment on the car, and designed to help it match the so-called highway rating, city rating and combined rating mileage on the sticker. And once I wore them out, I went and put some Michelin tires on it because I too like Michelin. And but I didn't get the Michelin green tires that would probably duplicate the mileage capability of the original equipment tires that came on the Sonata Hybrid. And I cannot tell you for sure, but I suspect I might have had a slightly lower MPG average with the Michelin tires because they definitely felt like they didn't roll as well on a coast situation. But I don't think I probably lost much more than maybe between a mile and or 2 miles per gallon average with those that over what they might have been with. I replaced them with the original equipment tires that were low roll resistance. But you're not going to pick on that because you'll never know until the tread wears down, and that's when it's going to you're going to have to trade the tires no matter what mileage you get with them.
All right, and in the final 20 seconds, anyone?
Yes, hey, safety tip. I've been thinking about this for a while. A safety kit including a fire extinguisher in the car. I was held up on the Mass Pike this week, or last week, rather. And I was I had to rubberneck to see it. Well, not really. There was a car burning on the side of the road, and the driver was about 100 feet away from the car with two or three cops and a fire engine, and there was nothing they could do. And the moral of the story is, if you have a fire extinguisher at your disposal, you usually can put out a fire pretty quickly if and when it sparks up.
Well, as I said to Jay last week, I know we got to quit. It's where it is in the car that you need to be aware of when you
under
get a fire
under the passenger seat in the
because
front.
If you can't get to it,
by
it's
the driver.
Going to be useless.
Right. All right. Thank you very much, both. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.